California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of California Underground Podcast. My name is Phil, your host, and as always with me is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West. And tonight we have a special guest from the American Bail Coalition, Jeffrey Clayton, the executive director. Jeff, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So, we can just jump right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what the American Bail Coalition does?
Absolutely. I've been an attorney for 20 years, traveled to 35 state capitals over the years, advocating on behalf of bail and pretrial justice issues. Our trade association is our underwriters of criminal bail bondsmen throughout the United States. And so I work on issues of bail reform from New York to California, and everywhere in between.
So in your experience, the point of tonight's show is we're going to be talking about rising crime rates in blue states. Specifically, we're also going to talk about here in California. Give us a little background as to how you got into this area, specifically this bail issue, and how that kind of relates with what we're talking about.
Sure. Actually, I was a private lobbyist years ago, and one of my clients were bail bondsmen. But I also previously represented the Colorado State Courts and Probation Department. So I have a background in criminal justice issues. And so to take on this question of should we eliminate money bail or not has been something that I've been worked on for the last decade now. So I have a conversation about whether we should have bail, what should bail be, should people get out for free, should people be supervised, all those sort of issues are things that we've worked on for the last 10 years.
And there's been sort of a trend recently about getting rid of bail reform. It always seems to come up about this idea of, oh, we should just get rid of bail. It's not fair or it's prejudicial. Why don't we start there with your idea or where you're coming from on bail, and we can kind of talk about that and dive into it more.
Well, I think there has been some criticism of bail, so I think I'll start there. I think people understand the fundamentals that bail is security for your release, that you are promising that you're going to return to court, and somebody's putting in what most people would say is some skin in the game. They're putting in something that you stand to lose if you don't show up to court. I think the criticism has been that hits poor and minority communities harder, and I think it can. And I think that's something that we've seen in California and elsewhere, is that the bail system can be arbitrary. If it's not taken seriously, it can be automatic in many cases where we just don't care if you can't afford it. And we've seen that throughout the country as well. But primarily what it's meant to do is guarantee your appearance in court, not to punish you, pending the resolution of these trials, because we're supposed to protect the presumption of innocence here. And the Supreme Court says the whole goal is to hold you over for safekeeping until we can get to the trial and find out what we're going to do in your particular criminal case.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have this idea of bail because they watch like Law and Order or something, or they hear like, right, oh, there's bail, or they're a flight risk or something like that. And you always hear the issue of like, oh, their bail set at $5 million or something like that. So I think it's a good way to kind of just break it down as to what the purpose of it is. It's like you said, it's not to penalize people. It's to make sure that they show up. And what happens if somebody doesn't show up? When I don't really know what the process is after if they don't show up.
Absolutely. I mean, various states have different rules on how long, but generally a forfeiture notice is sent, meaning you're going to lose this bond if you don't deliver the defendant into court within a certain time period. And bail agents, private bail agents, actually have arrest powers. They're taking custody of the defendant, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so that's regulated by various states. Crossing state lines can be regulated by the federal government. But the bail agent and the third party who co-signs the bond, mom or dad or family member or friend who also co-signed, are on the hook for that. And they then have a process to return the defendant. If they don't, they have to pay. And so when you're paying a bail bondsman, you're paying, a fee, a percentage to post the entire or you can post the entire amount yourself, or your third party can post the entire amount in cash and certainly risk that. And a lot of states allow you to post your property as well. So you can put up a deed to a house or something like that to secure a bail bond.
So is that sort of like, what was that show that was popular back in the day? Dog the Bounty Hunter? Like, didn't he go after people who skip bail, or what was that about?
He does. I know him personally. I've known him for many years. I do know Dwayne quite well. And the late, his unfortunate passing of his wife, Beth, who's also on the show, knew her quite well too, when she was president of the National Bail Agents Association. Mm. But that is what it is about, is that there is a remedy. Some states will limit, you know, how vast these powers are, like when you can, you know, you can't kick doors down, or you can't, you know, this sort of thing. But in general, you know, the power of custody is the power to go arrest, and in many cases overcome by force, you know, resisting arrest if they don't want to be returned to court. Now, practically what it means is, the dog show is really not the real scenario. The real scenario is working with law enforcement. A lot of these people are extremely dangerous, armed. So it's more tracking, I would say, than aggressively trying to arrest. It's, we have the guy, he's wanted on 12 felony warrants, right? He's armed, and then we have the police come in and him situation in a lot of these high risk cases.
So now that we have sort of a background, we all know, we have a better idea of what bail is. Let's start diving into rising crime rates in blue states like New York, California. If there's any other, please jump in and fill me in that you've seen as well. Are they intertwined? Is there an issue with bail? And is that what you're seeing, sort of this rising crime rates in states that try to do away with bail? Or what are you seeing?
Well, you know, we think there's an impact of that, but it's very difficult to prove. And I think there's other factors at work with the entirety of the crime wave. I don't think you could just say bail is the cause or X is the cause. I think there's a lot of things going on. Like the retail theft, I think, you can't just say that's a bail problem. I think that exploits how there's a bail as part of the weakness that's leading to the continuation of like things like retail theft. But I wouldn't say that bail is the problem. In places like New York, I think bail was the problem. I think we saw that. I think that people figured out when bail is zero, we're sort of predicting the ultimate consequence of a criminal case, that we don't care. And I think that's the message that suspects got in places like New York, in places like San Francisco, that we just don't care. And the real answer is, we don't want to tell people what their bail is. We want to tell them, you're going to have to figure that out when you go to court and talk to the judge. And when we send the signal that there's just not going to be bail on these charges, in essence, what we're saying is, we're not going to arrest you, we're not going to punish you. And that unfortunately is, I think, the message that bail reform has sent in places like New York and elsewhere.
I literally did not understand this, so thank you.
You see, even Camille's getting educated right now while we're sitting here. I think that there's this, like you said, that mechanism, if you don't have skin in the game, there may not be as much of a penalty, or may not be as an incentive to show up. We're obviously very familiar with what's going on with retail theft in California. It makes the news every single day. We've seen the videos of people smashing grabs. I mean, retail theft has, for a lack of a better term, probably killed downtown San Francisco. Do you have any commentary? You said it's not all bail, but like, what's some commentary that you have about like, why are we seeing such rising retail theft in California?
I do think bail's part of that component of organized retail theft. And the real answer is, these are large organized crime outfits that are stealing, you know, millions and millions of dollars in small pieces. And so the system's not set up to deal with that. And that's what you're seeing with this Proposition 47. Part of the reform is to, you know, kind of a three strikes on a retail theft type of a thing that's being talked about as part of that. So I think, you know, bail is a major part of that issue because of the felony theft threshold that has gone down. That's been another part of Proposition 47, is making it easier to steal more. So you don't hit that felony, you know, until you go up to $1,000. And so all of these components, I think, kind of led to this retail theft. And just as a phenomenon, I mean, I don't think we'd seen that before, that gangs of folks were using this versus just individuals. So you really have a collective group of people doing this, and that's been the difference. And so, you know, just being able to exploit the little things. You go to a small town, they're not going to arrest this guy for theft, they're not going to impose a bail, et cetera. And so but the accumulation of that has been huge. And so if people get caught, if people get ensnared in jail, even overnight, they'll know which jurisdictions not to go to. And that's just a reality. And so bail does, even though it's not supposed to punish, it does deter crime in that sense.
Did you guys see that story? I'm sorry, this is related. San Diego, recently, the woman that was arrested for, she had a ring of like, I forget how many people working for her who would go and do smaller theft of, I think it was like skincare, makeup, women's clothing or whatever. And she was running a whole ring, and she was just very recently, like last month, I think, arrested for that. She had made millions over a few years. And so I guess that's a perfect example of, in California, they can go and steal $900 worth of skincare and then, you know, sell that. And she's got a whole ring doing that. That's a lot of money.
Last time I was in California, I forgot my Bluetooth headphones, right? $9.99. I had to go get some. Had to get a key. Had to get somebody. I had to go to a special register. It took me half an hour to get these headphones. I'm like, at that point, do I really even need them? One of our contractors went into Target, and his wife normally goes to Target. Hadn't been to Target in a while. And basically walked around and couldn't get anything. And went up to the manager and said, how about I give you my credit card? You give me the key. And then I can go shop and get what I want. Because it just takes so long. Because everything's behind glass. So people are tired of it. I know that's true. But, you know, we're just not set up to fight retail criminals. We kind of just said we're not going to worry about that. And now all of a sudden we're going to have to worry about it, unfortunately.
I saw some guy on Twitter here in San Diego, and he like selectively went to different Targets. And he was like, well, I'm at this Target in this neighborhood and I don't see stuff behind glass. So I don't know what people are talking about. And then there were just reply after reply of like, yeah, go to this Mission Valley Target, go to this Target. And it was just stuff like, there's one here, the one in Mission Valley, we went once, and I felt bad for the attendants who worked there, because you're right. Every time somebody wants to get deodorant, you have to press a little button and an attendant has to come running and open it. And then you have to check it out, look at it. And then you're like, oh, what if I don't want it? Now you're just wasting everyone's time. So it's like these stores are suffering.
Yeah, and just the convenience factor alone. It's like, have we really sunk that low? But it turns out we have.
Yeah. So a lot of this, I mean, there is this push right now. Before we hopped on, we were talking about how there is this push to repeal, or I don't know if it's a repeal or a reform Prop 47. And a lot of people throw that around and what Prop 47 did. Do you want to talk about what Prop 47 is before we get into what it means to try and repeal it or reform it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the main kind of message is really it was a downgrade of various things that we took more seriously then, that we take less seriously now. And I think the felony threshold was a component of that, and some of the other changes and all the specifics are escaping me now, because I'm focusing more on what they're trying to do about it. But in essence, that was passed, I believe, in 2000. It's been 6 or 7 years ago now.
2014.
And of course, we did. Yeah. So it's almost 10 years ago now. So I can't believe I've been working on this for so long. Obviously, we didn't play a part in that because, you know, whether something should be more of a crime or bail should go up or down as a result of how serious we take a crime, you know, we didn't get involved. But we've certainly seen the impact of that. And that has largely been the elimination of misdemeanor bail in California, right? If you commit a misdemeanor and you know, you're just not going to have to post bail. And that sends the message that we don't care about these crimes. And I think we are, and I haven't seen the numbers, but I've got to think that people are thumbing their nose at this system much more in misdemeanor crimes. And you know, the ones that are under $9.99, they're just not really prosecuting very hard at all right now. And, you know, you got a 30% dismissal rate on felonies in Los Angeles as is. What do you think they're doing on misdemeanors? You know, the prosecution system is just not set up to handle this volume of low-level crimes.
Can I read real quickly what Prop 47 is, just for people watching to really understand in case they don't?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in 2014, Prop 47 was a ballot measure passed by California voters on November 5th. The law made some nonviolent property crimes where the value does not exceed $950 into misdemeanors. It also made more simple drug possession offenses into misdemeanors. It also provides that past convictions for these charges may be reduced to a misdemeanor by a court. Under Prop 47, you may qualify for a reduction from a felony to a misdemeanor for some of the following offenses: certain forgeries, commercial burglary, petty theft with priors, bad check, grand theft crimes, possession of stolen property, possession of a controlled substance.
Yep. I remember I was working as a law clerk. I think, what year was it? I think it was 2015. I was working as a law clerk at the DA's office, and there was a lot of grumbling about Prop 47 and how many of these crimes are getting reclassified. And even back then, they were like, this is going to be an absolute disaster. And that was barely a year into Prop 47 being on the books. And a lot of these prosecutors said, this is going to change so much. This is going to be a disaster. It just seems like they've completely cut like the legs out from lower level crime prosecution. Like there's just, it's kind of a snowball effect of, well, if we can't hold them on bail, if it's not worth prosecuting, then the cops aren't going to arrest them, because why are they going to do the paperwork to arrest someone, to bring them? And the DA is going to go, I'm not prosecuting them because it's not worth it under Prop 47. It just seems like it became like a whole snowball and took like the legs out of these lower level offenses, which still occur and they're still damaging, but it's just they're just not there anymore.
Yeah, the unique thing about the low-level offenses is we can't incarcerate ourselves out of the problem, right? We can't throw everyone in jail who steals. So we have to deter them. We have to convince them that they're going to get caught and they're going to get punished. And that's what we're not doing, right? And that's just fundamentals of deterrence, right? Certainty of getting caught, swiftness of punishment, right? And we have gotten completely away from that. And the other thing that means is, yeah, you don't have to lock up a low-level thief for 10 years, right? Just make sure you're hitting him every time and he's getting caught a lot and he's spending a week in jail or whatever. We're getting him and sending the message. And unfortunately, you know, we've gotten completely away from that. And I was going to use the word snowball. You know, another city that's having similar problems is Houston, Texas. And, you know, they had at one point a 76% dismissal rate on filed misdemeanor cases. So, you know, there's no, you know, you were talking about certainty of getting caught. Okay. These are the people that actually the police found arrested, and you know what I mean? So the certainty of getting caught factor is like, what, 1 in 100? And that just sends the message. And that's exactly what we have going on right now. So unfortunately.
It kind of reminds me of, and I don't know if this is like parallel or similar. It kind of reminds me, I'm from the East Coast, grew up in Jersey, and always hear the stories about how New York was on hard times in the 70s and part of the 80s as well. At the point where they even basically almost went bankrupt. And it wasn't until Rudy Giuliani and I can't remember the police chief's name who came in, but they imposed the broken window theory, which was if you send the signal that we're not going to put up with low-level offenses, we're not going to put up with this, that it will deter more crime. I mean, the theory is basically, if someone breaks a window in a neighborhood and you leave it broken, it sends a signal to everybody in the neighborhood. Nobody cares. No one's going to prosecute you. No one's going to arrest you. So I just remember that was the whole theory back then was, I think there was a good story about they would graffiti the subway cars, and then they had lookout guys watching them graffiti, and then they would come down, paint over it again immediately after. So it would even deter them from putting graffiti on subway cars, because they're like, I spent all this time on putting graffiti on subway cars, and they just came 5 minutes later and painted over. It's not worth it. So I mean, it worked in New York. It cleaned up New York. It completely transformed it from a slum to like a family destination.
Okay, but why couldn't they have police arresting the graffiti artists instead? they could afford to have someone watch them.
I think that was part, but it was also that broken window theory of like, we don't want things to look bad so that it just deters them. Like, it's not worth it to graffiti them. So I think in some cases they did arrest them, but.
Okay. Sorry.
They certainly did arrest them. And I think, but that does make the point of the broken windows theory. But really what it was in New York, and the fascinating part about New York as a case study is, it was the least incarcerated city, major city in the United States, at the same time had the lowest crime rate. And it tells you it can be done. We can hammer criminals without ballooning the corrections budget. And we managed to, as a result of New York bail reform, unfortunately, reverse 27 years of policies in 3 years. And so they're right back to this message. And it just goes to show you that if crime goes up or down, we just have to continue to send the same signal. Hey, we're not putting up with this. Hey, we're not putting up with this. And, you know, we can do reforms and all that sort of thing. But unfortunately, you know, word's gotten out. And one of the best ones ever was recently a panel before the New Mexico Supreme Court. A suspect showed up, a defendant who had posted bail multiple times, showed up to testify and said, "I don't know what you're doing, but I was in jail last week and the word has gotten out that you're going to get away with it. And that's what everybody was talking about. I'm coming down here to tell you it's probably not good for New Mexico." So, you know, he was a caring guy and showed up to tell them that word gets out. And that's what the criminal justice system, it's very much like the border. If it seems like it's going to be a good deal, people will go for it, regardless of whether we've had a fundamental shift in border policy. Have we? I don't know. But we certainly send a signal that come on over. And I think the criminal justice system is the same way in that respect, is whatever signal we send is what people, how people behave.
Yeah. And I think it creates a culture. And then it's almost like, I imagine it's probably like having kids. I don't know, Camille, if you want to chime in here. It's like if a kid pushes the limits of like, well, I can get away with X, then the next time it's like, okay, now I know I can get away with X. Let me see if I can push it a little bit more and get away with Y. And it just becomes like, how far can you push that line? And you're, like you're saying, the signal is, okay, we can push the line this far and we won't get caught, we won't get prosecuted, and we're fine. And then that just creates a culture and an enterprise of, well, we can all do this and we can pool our resources. And like the retail theft we're seeing here in California, we can make a nice enterprise, but most of us are not going to get caught or prosecuted, right?
Exactly.
Can confirm.
It's not a crime unless you get caught.
And Camille says you can confirm that is what happens with kids.
Like parenting.
Yeah, it's not a crime unless you get caught.
Right? I'm very like zero tolerance of all the things, and people will tell me I'm too strict, but I have really good kids. And I used to have a rule, like, they're older now, but if they would sit down and argue over a toy, I'd be like, "You argue, nobody gets it, because I don't want to listen to this." So it was like, yeah, you're going to figure this out or nobody gets this. And now people tell me all the time, not to like toot my own horn, but people tell me all the time, they are amazed at how well my kids get along. Like, absolutely, just like, who gets along that well? Cause like all, I mean, I don't want to like throw down my sisters, but all their kids argue with each other and they'll all be like, "How do your kids not argue with each other?" And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't let them. Never.
Yeah. You made them figure it out. You said, "Hey, you got to work it out amongst yourselves. Otherwise it's not going to go well for you."
So yeah. Camille is a perfect example of, you send this right signal.
Parenting, perfect example. I'm just kidding.
If you send the signal, it's going to work and get perfect kids. That's what we'll take away from this episode. So now we have all these problems. We have abandoned basically lower level offenses in a lot of blue cities, because it is, you know, the argument, whatever they want to try and make. Are you seeing more of a switch in a lot of these blue states in terms of sentiment on crime? Do you think there's people, like the voters, are starting to go, I'm starting to see the reality of these pie in the sky ideas? Are you starting to see sentiment change in these legislatures that you're kind of going to and lobbying and working with?
It's overwhelming. I mean, in California, last time I was there, one legislator said, "I used to get like, you know, one or two crime calls, you know," and he basically said he got one or two other calls the previous week, and all the other calls were about homelessness and crime. Like, every single constituent is calling. You can feel it in the state capitals. You can feel it amongst the legislators. It's weighing on them. And a lot of them are like, "Do you have any answers? Like, what do you think in bail can we do to, you know, or tighten things we can tighten down in the bail system?" In some cases, yes. And in a lot of cases, no. You know, it's other issues like Prop 47 or things like that. You just have to enforce the law or get prosecutors like in Los Angeles that want to prosecute. To prosecute. So it's basic things like that. But yes, we're seeing that from coast to coast. You know, my home state of Colorado, the pressure is on. Obviously, we saw what happened in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago with the retail crime theft package. I mean, split the Democratic caucus, but they're moving on it. And I think there's, desire to move on it. The Proposition 47 debate, you got the prosecutors and all the rest of the groups pulling signatures, but you've also got the legislature seriously thinking about maybe they want to get weigh in on that. And maybe they want to start tinkering around with Proposition 47, which I never thought I would hear. I thought that was just a permanent thing. We were downgrading that one. We would move on for that. I didn't think we were going to be revisiting that.
and maybe not this soon. So it's been a dramatic shift, definitely. And to talk about some of the other states, I mean, the conservative states are going just as nuts, but maybe even further nuts, like on the lock everybody up mentality to an extreme that we've actually had to kind of tamp down and say, you know, you're going to go a little bit too far there. You know, places like South Carolina and Tennessee, et cetera, trying to say, we just want to deny bail for all these people. We want to lock everybody up. And sometimes, you know, you go a little bit too far in times like these when the crime waves are happening.
Yeah, I'm interested because I always say there's a golden rule about politics. Is that politicians never like to admit that they're wrong about anything. And I think Prop 47 is a great example of what we're seeing, where Democrats in California are like, well, we're not going to admit Prop 47 was wrong when we did it, so we'll introduce this new package, Randy Rivera's. And I think it tweaks it. It kind of tweaks it on the margins. It doesn't really go at the heart of it. But politicians don't like the idea of like, oh, we have to go back and say we were wrong 10 years later. So they try and kind of nibble around the corners and see if that works. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like the nibbling, or should we just go direct at it?
Well, you're right. Nobody wants to admit that they got things wrong. And we used to have a saying that no government program fails. And if it does, it's because you didn't give us enough resources. You know, but that's really what's going on here is that we think this, you know, did fail. I do think they should fundamentally revisit it. And really it just comes down to discretion. I mean, you know, it's if people just keep doing it over and over again, that's more important than what they do. I mean, here we go back to having your kid. I mean, again, you know, maybe that, you know, they've done it 100, an annoying thing 100 times. And the big thing of it's kind of big, but not really that big. They only done it once and, you know, but whatever. It's they keep doing this pattern and you've got to get them out of it. Example, urban violent crime, 60 to 80% of urban violent crime is caused by 3 to 5% of defendants. So this is a small class of people that do it over and over and over and over. Felon, you're convicted felon, can't have a gun. They have a gun. You can't do that. They keep doing it. And they just keep doing it. And that is that is something that we've got to get our arms around. That's kind of what's going on in these urban centers right now.
Do you see, I think I was looking at your site discussing the issues of like recidivism in America. Do you have any comment on recidivism and sort of where we're at with that and seeing people, like you just said, people kind of keep doing it. They keep getting caught again and again, or they come out and they get caught again and they do it again. Do you have any thought on that?
It's gotten worse because we're labeling people poor that are recidivists. And recidivists are poor. Let's not get that wrong. A lot of recidivists are not, you know, rolling around with the bankroll. But we're designing policies to help the poor that are helping recidivists. And New York is the perfect example of that. Where in California, these zero bail policies are the perfect example of that. Because we say, if you're in this bucket of crimes, then you're low risk and it doesn't matter, right? And then a recidivist goes, aha, here's the loophole. I won't show up for court and I'll move on, right? And so they continue on, whereas we really did want to help the poor guy. We really did want to help the poor guy that should have gotten out, that wasn't going to get out, court process was messed up, and all that sort of thing. So we designed a policy, but we made it too broad and we allowed recidivists to torpedo it. And that is over and over what has been going on, is that we were over-sympathetic and we undersorted. We didn't have a good net on who we were giving the advantages to. And it turns out it was recidivists. And Houston, Texas, again, was a perfect example of that. You had 37 defendants that were out on 8 or more violent felony charges each at one time. And how is that even possible that a judge, you know, and a lot of those were PR bonds. So you had to, you know, a lot of these were not posting any bail on, you know, the first 6 charges, got out for free, and then had, you know, so the idea they had 37 people out on 8 or more felony charges was something that never happened in Houston until bail reform, and was something the then democratically elected district attorney went to the state capitol and worked with Republicans on to reverse, and they did reverse it. In fact, she got primary and she just lost to the progressive because she stood up to crime, and we had to say, you know, even though we didn't agree with her because she was kind of flip-flopper, at the end of the day, she stood up for what's right, and she lost her seat because of it. Unfortunately, that's politics for you.
Was there a positive trend after she worked with Republican legislators to correct it, or how did that work out?
Yes, because the judges weren't legally allowed to continue to let these people out after multiple felonies. They couldn't do what's called a PR or a personal bond in Texas on a certain number of charges. And so what happened is the number of people that were out on multiple bonds of those multiple time felons in the group that we wanted to hit shrank. And statistics ended up proving that. She ended up coming back to the Capitol the next year and presenting, and I don't remember the numbers specifically, but these reforms have actually worked to decrease the pretrial crime and recidivism numbers of this particular subset of people. And so it was a good case study on, look, yeah, okay, 37 defendants, 8 crimes each. That's a lot of serious violent crimes right there that are coming from 37 defendants. That'll keep coming if we let them back out to do what they do. Because those are the ones that got caught on. That's the other point.
Yeah.
There were a lot more that they didn't probably. So
that's surprising to hear that happened. Something like that even happened in Texas, of all places. You'd figure like someplace in Texas, they wouldn't allow a lot of this to happen. Okay. But I guess even in Texas, this stuff is happening, right?
It's just Houston because it's a major city and the sort of the demographics sort of changed in the last decade. For example, there were 16 county court at law judges. Texas has elected judges, and they were all Republicans. And then there was one Democrat for a while. And then about 4 years ago, the Democrat party swept the entire judiciary in Harris County.
Wow.
They handled all the misdemeanor cases and all of that. And so all of it changed dramatically as a result of that. And so, yeah, it is an aberration in Texas, but you can imagine everybody else in Texas is like, we don't want to be like Houston, and they're running legislation to try to, cities of $3 billion and more have to comply, and they're doing everything they can to try to crack down on the crime problem in Houston.
All of those people were people that fled California because it was too expensive and too crime ridden, and they went to Houston, but then they didn't like the Republicans, and so then they ran for office and overturned it, and now they're just getting more of what they fled. So I'm just kidding. I don't know that for a fact.
No, now they're moving to Nashville, and now we have to deal with them over there.
Oh, great.
And now there's bail issues in Nashville. So in turn, that's an interesting topic about red states that have cities that are democratically controlled. Is there any other example like Houston where like even a red state that you would think they're not going to let people get away with this? There are these little local, and shout out what we always say on this podcast, local elections matter. Are there any other examples of like cities or localities that do this?
Big bad Ron DeSantis. I mean, Florida, Miami, Dade County had a big bail reform going on down there. The judges were issuing a new policy and it was about to go into effect. And this was during the campaign. He, to his credit, loaded up all his people and went down and had a press conference on the steps of the courthouse calling for it to stop and scared him out of it. And so there's constant pressure in Florida between, Miami and some of the cities and the state capital there. So that's another one that you see that a lot in. Certainly Tennessee to a certain extent is one, because Nashville. You see that in Idaho quite a bit, because Boise is, you have a lot of Californians move to Boise. And Boise is turning liberal, where these very, very conservative people, primarily former LAPD members, are moving up there in the rural areas, driving the conservative policies up in Idaho. So you do see some of these states where you've got that, conservative legislature and liberal cities that butt heads quite a bit.
How much does, let's just say, a district attorney, how much say do they have in policies in terms of prosecuting? Because here in California, you may think like, oh, your hands are tied, you can't really do anything. But I can tell you from experience, our DA here in San Diego County is way better than George Gascon in LA. And you can see a difference in the crime in San Diego and LA. So how much do people need to know that, like, hey, pay attention to who your DA is, because that makes a big difference?
It makes a huge difference. And you're right about San Diego. That's always been a good district attorney's office. And it's been a fair district attorney's office. And for example, you look at the bond sizes in San Diego versus LA, the bails are lower, but yet they have better results. So, they're just a successful office. Now, let's look at what's going on in Los Angeles. Why is George Gascon an example of how things can go wrong? He's disabling his deputies from doing the job. The deputies that meet with victims of crime to hear them He's disabling them from doing that. He's telling his deputies that they cannot seek a bail in certain cases. When the Victims' Rights Act, I mean, you know, Marcy's Law says you have to hear from the victim first. He's prejudging cases with policies in place. And that goes for all the strikes, you know, the enhancers and all this sort of thing that he's removed from the deputy's ability to see. Justice has to be a case-by-case basis. And we have policies in district attorney's offices like that. It just stops justice from being had one way or the other. I mean, it's just indefensible. The funny thing about the bail policy is, you know, he issued a press release saying that he had spent all this time evaluating the bail policy. But when we looked at the date of the policy, it was like the day the election was won. There was no contemplation. They knew from the outset that they were just going to set these, you know, policies to drive an agenda. And in doing so, they divorced themselves from the case-by-case basis. And that's where justice has to happen. You have to talk to the victims. You have to go in and assess the facts of every case. And it's just sad that they got away from that. And, you know, the polls show him down by 20 points right now, and certainly got smoked in the primary. I mean, it's 78% of Angelinos voting for somebody else. That's
just
bad
read
news. If
Hochman you're seems to, is Hochman, Hochman seems to be
Hochman,
ahead
yeah.
of
him. It's
good.
Yeah. I think Trump's negatives are probably lower than George Gascoigne's in Los Angeles right now, to give you an idea of how bad it is. I think Trump would poll better. So he's going to have a heck of a time trying to convince people that he's handling the crime problem right now, or he has any plan to handle the crime problem right now. And I think this, unlike any other year, will be a vote of bums, vote the bums out of office year. I don't think, you know, we were talking about the primary down in Houston. We didn't think Sam Houston could have run the primary down there. It just, whoever was in office, we have a crime problem, we don't like it, you're out. And I think that may even go for the presidency. Like, we just don't like how things are going, you're gone. But that obviously that's a little more complicated race for various reasons.
Yeah, we just saw in California. I mean,
Phil
we freeze. Just saw. Did I freeze?
Yes, he did.
Or am I back?
Well, I actually had a question about how much do you think inflation is contributing to petty theft right now?
You know, I think the quality of life stuff, you know, the grocery store type of theft of things like, you know, razors and shaving cream and stuff like that, I think it does have an impact. I think it is harder, you know, the working class is having a harder time. I think it does have a slight impact, but that's not really the driving factor of what's happening. I think this is a whole nother generational thing, perhaps, where we just say, this is one thing where, you know, we don't prosecute people and it's cool. It's okay to just take what you need because it's the big corporate jerks and we don't care about them. And we're just not going to worry about it. So I think it's bigger. So I don't think it's, you know, they're stealing bread. They're trying to feed their families. I think some are, and I do think it has an impact, but I don't think it's what's driving this current retail theft and crime wave.
So I think am I back? Did I unfreeze?
Yes.
Okay. that happens from time to time. The question I had is, I mean, we just saw Chesa Boudin was recalled, which was great news. And now we see Pamela Price, like to your point that vote the bums out, Pamela Price is now being recalled as well. Oh, did I?
Yes. You cut out right after Pamela Price.
Oh, Pamela Price is now being recalled as well. So like you said, there is kind of this push to vote them out, which is interesting, even in California.
Yeah, and there's nationally this Protecting Americans Action Fund, which was a national group formed to, it's a simple proposition, elect prosecutors that want to enforce the law and make a judgment. And they could be soft on crime, but just make a judgment in every case. Look at the facts, enforce the law. And that's unfortunately where it's gotten, is that, you know, we used to always say you want your prosecutor to be a little bit of a jerk. You need a little jerk in your prosecutor because you want him to go a little further than he should so that the public defender can come in and stop him and the judge can kind of have a good process here. But we don't, not only do we not have jerks, we have people that just don't even want to do the job. And I don't know how they take an oath to uphold the law and then just not uphold the law. I don't know how they reconcile that in their minds, but that's really what we're looking for now, unfortunately, is somebody who wants to be a prosecutor. I would have made a terrible prosecutor, so I never would have done that. But at this point, even I could get in the ring because I'm just willing to enforce the law and, you know, make the case-by-case judgment.
So we got a couple minutes left. Why don't you give us a little bit more about American Bail Coalition, where people can find you, and like, what are your next steps and what are you guys working on? Give us a little summary.
Absolutely. AMBailCoalition.org is probably the best place. We're on what was Twitter. I still wish it was Twitter as well. What are we really working on? I think the thing that's really going on right now in California that nobody is paying attention to is Los Angeles. You know, there's a big litigation, big lawsuit over whether the bail schedule was unconstitutional because people couldn't afford their bail and that was unfair. And so the judges reacted to that. And really what they did was create a review procedure for people where we said, well, we're going to assume you're going to get out for free and then we're going to take a look at it. And that way we don't have to subject you to the horrors of a bail schedule. Unfortunately, what's happening is people are parked in jail for days now because the system's not keeping up. And so what we're seeing is people that can afford bail now are getting ensnared along with the people that can't. And so we're compounded the problem in Los Angeles. So we're continuing to follow, you know, what's happening with that. There is some legislation in California going on right now, you know, dealing with the how quickly hearings are going to happen in terms of bail review in California. So hopefully a deal will be made on this. Due process in California is too slow, right? And talking to the Democratic majority, they want to shrink that down. And that makes sense. In Florida, you get within a judge within 24 hours to argue your bail decrease. You know, California, that could take a little longer than that. So I think everybody wants to shrink that. And so we'll continue to be working on that throughout the summer and see if, you know, legislators want to make a deal. And more importantly, do they want to put their money where their mouth is and fund, you know, the system to do all the new hearings that'll happen as a result of all this. So it'll be a busy summer.
Yeah. Like you said, it's a busy election year and it might be a big vote the bums out because crime's up, inflation's up and all that. So it might just be a huge upheaval election that we're facing right now. So.
Absolutely. I think you're going to see a lot of incumbents being tossed out for that reason. And then, the presidential, you know, we'll wait for the October surprise and see how that goes.
I mean, we even saw in San Francisco, they voted for more police power, not less, which who would have thought in San Francisco they voted for more police power, not shrinking police power. So they're going in the opposite direction, even in San Francisco.
I know. And, you know, unfortunately, hopefully it's not too late to save what I consider to be a really great city. I mean, hopefully they can turn things around. But I think it's going to take years. I don't think you can just turn the switch on this and say there's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to take a long time of sending the signal. And also the drug problems, the issues with all these drugs, it's totally different than, you know, when we were growing up. It's a whole different ballgame that you can die, you know, with the amount of lead on the tip of a pencil can kill multiple people. I mean, that's just scary. But that's what's going on. And, you know, the cartels and all the other stuff going on. It's a multi-year major problem. Look at what's happened in Oregon. Legalize all drugs, reverse that. And just determine, hey, we got to do something. We just can't get these. We don't have a hammer to force people to do something for their own good. Then we just determine, you know, we can't do anything for these people. And, you know, it is a humanitarian crisis and we do need to do something. And part of that's unfortunately going to be law enforcement. You know, respect the police. Let's get them out there. Let's make sure they're, you know, not biased, all that sort of thing. But, you know, we are going to have to send a signal that society's not going to put up with this. And I think that's what people want right now.
Well, Jeff, thank you for coming on and talking about this issue that
absolutely.
I didn't know a lot about. And I learned a lot tonight. Camille, I think, learned a lot as well about bail that we both didn't know. One more time where people can find you guys and support you guys before we sign off.
Absolutely. AMBailCoalition.org or look for us on X.
Great. As we end every show, thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure to like, share, subscribe, review. All that stuff helps with the algorithm. Best way to support this show that is absolutely free is just share it with somebody who might be interested in this topic. And with that said, we'll see you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.